Welcome to the Seven Figure Practice with Gerda Muller, clinical psychologist and leading private practice success business coach and mentor to allied health professionals.
Okay. Alrighty, we are live and loving it. Hey, welcome everybody. the GST sessions. Oh my God.
Could see it was the end of the financial year, thinking GST. There we are. I've got us live.
Yes, we are very much live and loud. So, all righty. So we are, I'm just trying to find myself again on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we? There we go. All right. So what I will do now, welcome everybody. We're going to be talking about some exciting things. Well, not exciting things, scary things, sad things, stressful things. All the things today. I'm going to get us recording and I'm going to do our little intro as well. But first, make sure that everyone is seeing what they need to be seeing on the book of faces, as my husband sometimes calls it.
That's what I'm doing now, sharing it as well first on my page.
And we're going to my group. Oh, I need some silence. Okay.
Oh, watch party. Yes.
Okay, watch party.
Which group? Start.
Right. Oh. In the brave, quite confidence. Leading room. Good access and beyond. And that will be.
We that?
I believe. I think we are ready to rock and roll.
We are. Loving your flowers, by the way.
Lovely. I actually am a bit spoiled at the moment. I've got a couple of florists, one in particular nearby me who's been very smart and clever during COVID, who's actually agreed to be interviewed in my book.
Oh, good.
Yes. So there are a few businesses locally that I'll be interviewing for case studies in my book about surviving the global pandemic. And so I love them. And I keep saying to them, I really should just get you guys to deliver me flowers every week, but I just love to go in and see what they've got.
Yeah.
A big bunch and come and play with them. But these are quite lovely, this sort of snapdragon.
Yeah.
All right, let's get
this. Oh, I love it.
It's nice. Mm. It's nice to have fresh flowers. And I've got some daffodils and things coming out now too. All the spring flowers.
So you guys call it snapdragons. In South Africa, in my language, we call it leubeckies. So leubeckies, the direct translation is lion mouths, like the mouth of a lion.
Yeah, right.
You know, because it's like this little mouth thingy. So when you are a child, we would play with it. It's like it's the mouth of the lion.
We need to... well, we would do the same. We would pull them off. I mean, my fingers are probably too big to do it now, but we'd pull one of the little flower heads off and put our fingers in and treat it like a puppet.
Yes. How awesome is that, right? That at different continents, different cultures, and we do the same thing as kids, right? With the flowers.
I love it. And honeysuckles. And we'd suck the honeysuckle. There was a honeysuckle bush outside my primary school when I grew up in Launceston. We're at the bus stop right at the front of the school. There's this big honeysuckle bush and we were always pulling the honeysuckles off while we waited for the bus. So
awesome.
All right, I'm going to get us recording and see how we go. All right, and I think we are ready to go. Welcome to the GMT sessions. Today we are talking about lockdown in Melbourne and what, well, lockdown 2.0 is what we're calling it. Down here and what we've learned, I guess, about the need to be flexible and the need to expect the unexpected and how everybody, I think, can perhaps take something away from this, because one of the things that is not to be overlooked is it's Melbourne now, but it could be anyone. It could be any part of Australia. It could be any part of the world where something happens. It only takes one person to infect another bunch of people, and before you know it, you've got, you know, an outbreak. I know that, you know, we're in such contrast because I'm here in Melbourne. I'm in lockdown, only leaving my home for the four valid reasons. And you're in Queensland where borders are reopening to tourists. So we've actually got such a contrast
in
what's going on in our world at the moment.
Very much so. I was actually thinking about that earlier this morning when I got your boxer and we said we're going to speak about this general topic. And I thought, it is so, it's like black and white currently. Yeah. So even though, yes, it's still COVID and all of that stuff up here, but my life hasn't been impacted at all, really, other than just being more mindful if the kids get sick, not to send them to school. Right. And that's it. But there are people that are really so significantly impacted and it's causing such emotional and psychological and, you know, stress as a result of not only the impact on our personal relationships, but business related. It's huge. And we know that, especially if you're a small business owner, whatever happens at work has a direct impact on your relationships at home, the future of your family. So it's really, really significant.
That's it. So that's exactly right. I mean, we've got most kids. So here in Victoria, well, in Melbourne, it's not the whole of Victoria that's in lockdown, but in Melbourne, most children will be returning to learning from home. They've been granted an extra school holidays. They should have been back at school today, but it's school holidays been extended for another week for most kids. And then it'll be learning from home beyond that. And so for a lot of people, you know, we've talked before about, you know, the hospitality industry and other industries where, you know, it's really hit hard. I think a lot of businesses had really put big effort into reopening, getting ready. And I know that talking to some of the hospitality industry people in my area, they had bought stock, they had hired new staff, they had done a whole bunch of things that actually cost money. And then we had such short notice about going back into lockdown. It was very, very quick. And people were caught unawares. And unfortunately, you know, that's a further hit to businesses that were already trying to recover. And I know that there's lots of mental health professionals who are worried, especially here in Victoria, about whether or not to continue with face-to-face interventions or whether to go back to telehealth. Some will do a mix, some will do one or the other. So I think this idea that, you know, it was over, you know, a lot of people think it was over, easing of restrictions meant it was over. And, of course, the politicians are telling us, don't think this means it's over, but we weren't really quite believing that, I think, is the issue. Now, of course, in Sydney, there's fears that there's an outbreak that's looking, that it has potential to be a major problem. But hopefully it won't be, but the potential is there.
The thing is, this little bug is freaking contagious, right? So there are going to be outbreaks, and if people don't, you know, follow the rules of social distancing and that stuff, we're going to see more and more of that happening. And that's just how it is. It's extremely contagious. That's where the danger in this lies. And I don't know, you know, I wonder. We've all been through, well, the majority of us have been through lockdown 1.0, the first round. And I thinking back, it actually feels like so long ago, but it wasn't, just because I think there was so much stuff happening and decisions having to be made, and it was so exhausting and all of that stuff. And having gone through it, changing policy, adjusting stuff, and then getting to the end of it. And on the one hand, one might expect round two to be easier because it's like, we've been through that, right? But I think what makes it hard, and I don't know what you are hearing on the ground where you are, is it's because of the expectation that we're going to go back to some type of normal, the expectation that it is over, and therefore not being ready to go through it a second time, right? Because the impact was so significant, so much change, and everybody just, I guess, was just wanting it to be all better, right? To be normal again. And then this huge disappointment that it's not like that, even though we have been through it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it is. And, you know, I saw some interesting emotional reactions to, I was actually in getting my nails done. I was in the nail salon getting my nails done, and the press conference, you know, the premiere going live, that was, you know, I got the notification on my phone that the premiere was going live, and we had a feeling, I think for the, especially that morning, there just started to be this feeling, everyone was, there was this ripple, you could feel it, everyone had this feeling that we were going back into lockdown. And so I was in the nail salon, I put my phone on speaker so everybody could hear the announcement. We all huddled, metaphorically huddled around my phone like it was World War II, listening to Winston Churchill on the radio, on the wireless or something.
Oh my goodness,
That's how it felt. Yeah, the whole place went silent as we listened to what was going to happen. And I just watched the faces of these girls in the salon, you know, just and because they were going to, now I don't know what arrangement they have in their business. I don't know if they're all, you know, contractors or hair salons, or whether they're employers or what they are, but I could just see, I could see the cogs whirring behind their eyes of like, what's this meaning? See the worry about money. I could see the sadness about having to close the business again for a period, and so on. And you know, it was even though we were expecting it that morning, it didn't make it easier to hear it confirmed, and to see their reactions was really quite sad. That night, we weren't in lockdown that day. I think we had that night where we were still not in lockdown, and we went to our favourite little place around the corner for dinner, and we've become regulars there, and so we know the staff quite well. And, you know, the maitre d' was nearly in tears himself, but he pulled himself together and he said, the good news is we know what to do this time. Last time it took us weeks and weeks to figure out how we were going to survive it. Now we know exactly what we're going to do, and we're going to just keep doing what we did before because it worked. My kids, when we told my kids, I mean, my kids burst into tears, you know, so. So it was, and for us, we also, we've talked before, you know, I have a house in Hobart that we, would like to be tenanted and rented out, but we had to leave. My husband had to drop everything and run. With lockdown 1.0, he was in Tassie, starting the process of getting the house ready for rental. He had to drop everything and run. So our house still looks like we've just popped off to the shop. And so we spent maybe, there was a little bit of maybe a half hour period during the day, that day, where I realised we could get to Tasmania, we could get the dog to Tasmania, we would be quarantined in the house for 2 weeks, and then we could get the house finished, ride out part of lockdown in Tassie, get the house sorted out. That was half an hour, and then we had the announcement from the Premier of Tasmania that the door was closed, we would have to go back into hotel quarantine if we went back to Tassie. So we just had this rolling set of decisions taken out of our hands, which is great in one way, because the decisions taken out of our hands, and that's just our family, it's just our example, but so many businesses, so many people, I've got, you know, private practice owners worrying about infection control, we've got private practice owners worrying about whether or not to see people at all in face-to-face situations. You know, I even had my GP telling me that he was having to, you know, talk down his nursing staff that it's okay, you know, you're still going to be safe, it's still going to be all right, we're still going to, you know, so people in every setting are worried. So I guess the lesson, and this is the point is, okay, so what can we learn? What can we take away from this that's helpful to everybody? Tasmania was meant to open their borders to tourists from the 24th of July. They've said no to Victoria straight away with lockdown. They've now said no to everybody. They're not opening their borders again. So the ripple effect is, what does this do for the tourism industry in Tasmania? So, you know, if people from Tasmania want to travel to Queensland, that's fine, but they'd need to go into hotel lockdown when they come back. So that's not going to happen either. So there are ripple effects in lots of sectors. And my feeling is that people keep talking about the new normal, but I think this is what we have to expect, is this quite rapid peaking and,
It's hard because when we can't see that light at the end of the tunnel, or we saw it and now it's dark again, that's very discouraging, right? That's what causes a lot of this, not hopelessness, but sense of, oh my goodness, or like, really, do we need to go through this again? And that's the difficulty. When there is a brightness of future, you've got something to hold on to, something to look forward to, right? And then it's really hard when there's those waves. And I think it's important to start, you know, really reminding ourselves that this is potentially, there could be a third and even a fourth wave. Yeah. I mean, just thinking that makes me frustrated and disappointed, because, as you know, my parents were meant to fly out from South Africa to come and stay here for 5 years on a visa a week after they closed the Australian borders. So they're like sitting in a little apartment in South Africa, wasting their visa for months and months. Their furniture have already arrived here in Australia. We don't know when they're going to come. I also think, you know, just from a tourism perspective, from international tourists, I think the consequences of all of this on our economy, we're only going to see that in probably a year or so's time, right? So it's so hard to see what the ultimate outcome is going to be of all the stuff that we're going through now. And again, which makes it hard to have that future vision. Right, which we know is not good for people's mood and the way we feel, and having that inherent sense of it will be okay, which I truly believe it will be, but it's really hard when it feels like there's now another thing, now I need to go through this again, and stuff that I've done might not have helped. So it's about coming back every day now, thinking about what it is that I can do today, what decision do I need to do today, what do I need to do today to ensure that my business is okay, my clients, my team, my family, and of course, very importantly, that I'm going to be okay in order, especially if you're the captain of the ship, right? Has to steer, that has to make all these navigational decisions, that needs to decide, you know, where we're going, how we're doing it, and all of that stuff. It's going to be so important every day coming back to those decisions. And also, I mean, the pressure that people are putting on themselves to make the right decision. And we see that with our community, because they are such want to do the right thing kind of people, right? That's who we are. We want to do the right thing for our team and our clients and our community. And then that internal struggle, especially when there's not so much information to help you make the right decision. A lot of the information is vague. Yes, when you're in lockdown, that's very clear, right? But because of our type of industry, the fact that we still have the right to do face-to-face, that's where then that moral decision-making comes in. Because now legally we can do face-to-face, but now it becomes like a moral thing. Is this the right thing to do, right? Given the type of client population I have, how vulnerable they are. Whether that's physical vulnerability, emotional, mental vulnerability, and weighing them up with the vulnerability of your team and yourself and your family and people that you get into contact with. And that's what makes it so difficult, especially mental health practice owners.
I think so. And on that score, I'm hearing regularly stories of, you know, practitioners who make a decision one way or another about face-to-face sessions, and that will be based on their own decisions around what capacity they have to stay safe and hygienic and socially distanced within their practices. You know, it might be about geographical location that they're in, might be a low-risk area, and so on. Getting criticised. And the flip side's also true. People who are choosing to do 100% telehealth getting criticised. And I think that, you know, there is no one right answer for the whole of community, let alone the whole of profession. So I think we really need to just be mindful. You know, if you're a member of a group where that kind of criticism is tolerated, then I encourage you to not expose yourself to that kind of that kind of treatment anymore, no matter what industry you're in. But obviously we see it a bit in our industry too. If you're a member of a group that's meant to be a professional supporting group and that behaviour is tolerated, my advice right now We've got enough on our plate. We've got enough stress on our shoulders. We've got enough decision making that we need to do. A simple decision is just not to expose yourself to that stuff. You know, I encourage people to
totally
just unfollow the group for a while or whatever it might be if you get some benefit from being a member. Because there's no room. I think there's absolutely no room for criticizing others' decisions right now. Because we're all doing the best we can. You know, and it is, it's a difficult time. It's a really difficult time.
100%. I'm looking as you were talking there, I took a screenshot of a graph I saw. I know it's here somewhere, but I've got so many freaking screenshots on my computer that I took, and it was very interesting stats. I'll find it. And when I find it, maybe afterwards, I'll pop it into the comment section where they actually did research on, I think it was for the month of April. So that would have been lockdown 1.0, right? April. And they looked at the number of face-to-face appointments still happening within the allied health and mental health specifically industry versus telehealth. And it was actually very interesting. Telehealth like increased so significantly, but there were still hundreds and thousands of sessions being happening face-to-face, right? So again, you know, the one ain't better than the other. And it's about coming back and making that decision based on your location. Like our locations are vastly different. If I had a private practice here, my decision-making would be informed by very different, well, the same variables, but I would come to a different decision based on your practice if you had a practice in Melbourne CBD, right? Totally different. So it's about recognizing that our colleagues and our peers, depending on where they're located, you know, also the type of people, you know, that they're engaging. Is it independent contractors that have the right to make their own decisions around do they or don't they do telehealth versus having a team of employees where you are responsible for making that decision, you know, the clientele that you have, all of that stuff, so many variables that impacted, and really coming back to, as long as I'm making the right decision based on all the health proper authorities giving me information based on what I know to be ethical, you know, looking also at my moral code, because I need to be able to sleep at night. Doesn't matter what type of decision I make, I have my can I sleep at night test. If I can't sleep at night making this decision, it's the wrong decision. If I'm going to sleep at night, then it's the right decision. Even though this decision might keep somebody else up, right? It's different. They might have different morals and values than I, and we can just do what is right for each of us. And then also respecting that each person is going to do that, right?
Yeah,
and not judging one another, as you say.
I think that's right. I think, yeah, I was listening to the Victorian Chief Health Officer yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I was talking to someone else about this morning, and I said, you know, I can only imagine that he's let this slip, this information, because up until now we've been hearing about timelines for vaccines. It's been maybe end of the year, start of early next year is probably when we'd be looking at. He was talking about, you know, expecting the ups and downs and to be our new normal for a while. We have to get used to this, even if it's 2 years away for a vaccine. And my ears tricked up, because it was the first time. And he corrected himself and said, 18 months or more. I thought, okay, so we're now no longer talking about the end of this year, early next year. We're talking 18 months to 2 years. And I thought, that's actually really helpful information. Because let's be honest and let's know what the facts are. If it is 2 years away, we don't know when it's going to be. They'll discover it when they discover it. But if we do start thinking like that, if we do start thinking this is a lot longer term than we originally thought, there are going to be more ups and downs than we originally thought. And if we can start shifting our focus and say, okay, we are on a merry-go-round. A roller coaster, not a merry-go-round. We didn't choose to get on the roller coaster. But we're on it, and we have to expect the ups and we have to expect the downs. We'll come out of lockdown eventually, but no doubt at some point we may, as you say, we may have to go back in at some point too. We just can't know. I think that, you know, knowing that that's a likelihood and it's a potential, you know, longish term likelihood, then we need to start thinking accordingly, and we need to start planning accordingly, and we need to say, okay, well, what are the smart things that I can start to do? I can increase, you know, ways that I support my community. I might run online training in anxiety management, or I might run, you know, how-to videos on, you know, if you're a nail technician, on how to look after your nails, or how to cut your kid's hair, or whatever it might be. If we add that to our suite of offerings and suite of services that we provide to our community, then we've got options for when we can't see people face to face. You know, the restaurants that are doing the at-home, at the little place that we had the dinner, the last supper before lockdown, they do a lovely hamper, and they do this beautiful hamper, and it's prepared up to a point, and then you finish cooking yourself. And so you end up with a restaurant-quality meal. It's not like Uber Eats where it's cooled down by the time you get it. And they're just going to keep doing that. They're going to keep doing that. And I know other restaurants have little corner shops where they sell the gourmet delights in the front part of their restaurant. You know, and they adding those revenue streams that came out of desperation, holding on to them and carrying them forward as part of your offerings. And it's the same, I think, with our profession with telehealth. Too many people I'm starting to hear little murmurs of, well, this is meant to end. These telehealth Medicare item numbers, they're meant to end on the 30th of September. So maybe I won't offer telehealth anymore. I think we need to get back to the conversation about offer what the client needs, let the client choose, fully informed, if there's a rebate or there's not a rebate, let the client be prepared that the rebate might end, but the service doesn't. You're available for that option for them.
You know, and that is a good prompt to move away from thinking that I can only provide a service if there's Medicare rebates, because your clients might not be ready for face-to-face come the end of September, right? But they still want treatment, because all our clients are so different, and client choice when it comes to their mental health care is such an important principle, right? It's one of the mental health principles or standards here in Australia, is that people need to have choice. And it's important for us as the providers to first and foremost challenge ourselves on that thinking. Yes, it's great when people can have their rebates, but it's not a necessity. Right, people, there's going to be a lot of people that's going to value protecting themselves and their health, and of that of maybe vulnerable family members is going to be way more important than a meager rebate for a session. So yes, it might be one thing to think about, but that should not really inform your decision in terms of whether you do telehealth or not. I mean, it would be amazing if they just allow it to continue indefinitely, right? Because I just think that helps our community, but it shouldn't be a determining factor.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think that, you know, if you and I ran the world, we would make lots of very sensible decisions.
We should.
Such as telehealth. And, you know, and I've got, I need to follow up with my GP this week, and I'm quite comfortable with that being a phone call. I no longer feel the need for that, for me to sit in his room and talk to him.
And they're always running late, bless their souls, but that's the nature of general practice, right? Because they've got crises and emergencies and stuff. So it's, you never get seen at your appointment time. Just the amount of time it saves you is like amazing.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
My expectation going forward is I would like to have that option. I don't care if there's a Medicare rebate or not, that's fine. There's a Medicare rebate, great. If there's not a Medicare rebate, to me, the convenience of being able to sit here on my phone or my laptop, get on their website or their app that they use for bookings, go, oh, they've got a spot in half an hour, I'll grab that, and they'll ring me.
And the thing is, I mean, I'm all for, you know, in-person care, but I think, you know, GPs are so busy, right? And Australia doesn't have enough doctors. We know that, right? There's a huge shortage. But I think, you know, just in terms of, I know we already have, you know, telehealth for rural people based on the Monash area maps and all of that type of stuff. But making it available to everyone, potentially also allowing GP surgeries to run a tad more efficiently, right? There's going to be less chit chat. Like last week, I had to go in for a script, right? And then I know, so you have to go in person. But a lot of times, you know, there's a bit more chatter happening. It could potentially, even if it just opens up one additional appointment a day, because they are also running more efficiently. Not a lot of people, you know, standing at reception, all of that type of stuff, to see one extra patient a day. Or maybe they can just run more efficiently and have less stress and burnout on them as the doctors, right? Because there's less foot traffic coming through their practice, because people take attention. And then also allowing the people that really need the in-person attention to get better attention, right? Because sometimes when you're so unwell, you really don't feel like going to the doctor. It's almost a punishment to get there, right? I don't know what I'm saying. It's like, well, I think there's a... There's a lot of benefits to it.
And I think that I know that the government was intending to review the telehealth items specific to COVID telehealth before the 30th of September. And I would hope that that review will take into account the things that you're saying, you know, that more people are being seen now, the efficiencies behind it all. All of those factors are actually really, really important. But I think going forward, again, tying it back to, if we are looking at a couple of years before we've got an effective vaccine, and we're seeing just, I mean, when those COVID-19 items came out for Medicare, there was no idea then how long this was, we were going to be in this, or how big it was going to get. So I would expect that if we've got a longer term plan of ups and downs in, you know, periods of lockdown, periods of, you know, outbreaks, those sorts of things, then it makes sense to keep people, give people options not to have to mingle if they don't have to mingle. And telehealth is one of those options that isn't easy. The person's going to go to the doctor anyway, hopefully. But I know when I was, you know, mother of small children, I would think twice on a clinical level, you know, do I actually need, if my child's got a sniffle, it's a pre-COVID, if my child's got a sniffle, do I need to expose them to whatever else might be in a waiting room when I know that I'm probably going to be sent home and told that they've just got a sniffle? We'll see what comes.
And sometimes, especially as a new mum, you just want to hear that it's probably just a sniffle, right? to make you feel better, that there's nothing you can do other than just give them lots of love and cuddles and attention, right? And that can be done via telehealth as well. It just makes it so much easier.
So, I was talking to the NOW technician about, you know, and this is one of these lovely salons where they do all of the beautiful beauty treatments, and they use all the organic products and whatever products and so on. And I said to her, you know, you need to think about what else you can do online, because they were the salon that I got the lovely kits that we could use that I got off their website. And I said, and she said, oh, look, we did have some success with, I congratulate her actually on their social media presence during the first lockdown. I said, you know, I was really conscious of the effort that you guys were putting into helping people care for themselves from home, using video and other techniques online. And I think she was saying they got lots of positive feedback from their customer base, but also from new customers coming forward who were excited when they were able to reopen. And she said, you know, our initiative will be to continue to do that, you know, teaching people how they can look after their nails or their eyebrows or whatever it might be while they're in lockdown. We'll use video to do that. And I think that you and I have talked a lot about this for the mental health professions, about using social media as a service to the community, educating the community and supporting the community. I'm a big fan of using social media to debunk what psychologists look like and sound like, so that it's not such a scary prospect to go and see a mental health professional. And so I would encourage, you know, anyone who's not yet on social media for their business, but especially social mental health professionals, to just think about that conversation that I had with the NOW technician about how helpful their customer base found their social media content during that period of lockdown. Little things like, you know, you can use olive oil to oil your cuticles so that all the hand sanitizer you're using doesn't destroy your nails. Yes. Little things like that, you know, that might seem about vanity, but it's also about personal grooming and self-care and all of those things. You know, when we're talking about mental health care, we can provide a lot of support to the community, you know, online, whether that be in therapeutic one-to-one sessions that are part of your business revenue generation, or whether it be through doing something to help educate the community and support the community in that way.
Yeah. And how awesome that you gave her that feedback, right? Because what I know from talking to a lot of practice owners, they put content out there a lot of time, really awesome content, and then they just stop because they go, oh, but nobody engaged, nobody liked it, nobody shared it. Doesn't mean nobody's looking, right? A lot of people are looking. So you have to be consistent, because I can guarantee people the work, the people that put in the work right now into social media, you might not see the results from it right now, but you will see it in the future, because if you are the person that's talking to them, helping them keep their head above water, so to speak, right, from a preventative and inspirational and educational standpoint, when they are ready to ask for help, or when they are ready to reach out and book an appointment, guess who they're going to call, right? Guess who they're going to email or reach out to? You, because you've already built up that trust and you've given them that value. So it's really about playing the long game as well here, and just also allowing yourself to share the stuff that you love so much, right? Yeah. It can be a bit selfish in terms of giving you an opportunity to still do the work that you love so much, but just sharing it on a different platform. And I know it can be very, very scary, but once you get started, it is actually really fun.
Okay? Of course it is. Yeah, it is. It is. You know, and I'm still looking after my voice at the moment and not doing as much talking on social media. But the nice thing about that for me is I've gone back to doing more writing on social media, and I'm really enjoying that. I love it. I think that you're right about the whole likes and follows and shares things. I don't look at those numbers. You know, they don't interest me at all. I'm doing it because I enjoy doing it. And I'm doing it because I really hope that somebody will get some kind of connection with whatever it is I'm talking about on that particular post, whether it's a verbal post or a written post, you know, that someone will feel supported. Every now and then, once in a blue moon, I will get a message or a comment. Thank you, I needed to hear that today. You know, and that's enough. Even if it's only once in a blue moon, that's enough to keep me motivated to know that somebody's been, and even if I never got any feedback, knowing that people do feel supported. You know, they don't feel alone. They feel that, you know, they're not the only person going through what they're going through.
Correct. And there's a reason why it's called vanity metrics. Right? Because it's about vanity. Oh, how many people liked my post? How many people shared it? It is about vanity. But the fact of the matter is, to be successful on social media, you need to do it consistently, and you will only do it consistently when you're not in it for the vanity metrics. When you are in it to serve, to help, to support, empower just that one person, just that one person that is reading it. Like, case in point, right? For some reason, over the last couple of days, I found myself watching a lot of Mel Robbins, you like her, right? Mel Robbins's stories on Facebook. Like, her stories kept on popping up. And it was such consistent posts. And a lot of people might look at it, and maybe she's even looked at it and gone, oh, it must be boring because I'm putting the same thing up every day. It's like she has had these regular posts where she gets up like early, right? Like between 6 and 7. She does the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, getting dressed, you know, going to do yoga at home. She's got a little home studio there and making her bed. But it's consistent every day, every day, every day. And I went last night, tomorrow morning, I'm doing 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 at 6 o'clock. I'm not getting up at 7 like usual. I'm getting up at 6. I want to add an extra hour to my day because I've got so much stuff that I want to get done before Elevate 2020, right? It's like I've got all these stuff and then I have all this other stuff that I need to do, one extra hour a day. That's what I'm taking. And that was my inspiration from her stories. And it's like the same stuff every time. It's not like a new thing. She's not reinventing her motivation every morning. It's the consistency of it, right? And she doesn't know it, but it changed my Monday, right? It might change my entire week. She doesn't know it. I didn't like her story. I don't go to her Facebook page even. I just follow her stories. That's all I follow because it works for me. It's sharp and sweet and it's right at the top of my thing, right?
Yeah.
And it worked. And that's the thing, you don't know. You need to trust that if you are sharing your truth, if you are sharing authentically and you're doing so consistently, it will be touching people's lives. And that helps you to stay consistent.
Exactly right. So, you know, and I think that consistency is what people, that's where they get frustrated. They get frustrated because they're waiting for feedback. And I think that you have to make a decision that if this is one of the things I'm going to do to future-proof my business against all these ups and downs, it's one element of future-proofing your business is maintaining a consistent presence. So if I'm making the decision to maintain a consistent presence so that my business stays visible, even if I'm in lockdown, and these were the businesses I was really impressed with, who even though they'd had to shut their doors, they still had a visible presence online throughout that lockdown 1.0, and no doubt they'll do it again now. You're doing it for those reasons. You're doing it to remain a visible presence. During lockdown 1.0, I was putting out you know, posts around stay visible because we need to know you're there. So I think it's really important when we think about that concept. So for me, with the business clientele that I am speaking to mostly online these days, it's really reassuring to see that your favorite bookshop, you know, to see in their stories what they're doing behind the scenes, to see that they're still there, your favorite restaurant or your favorite cafe or your hairdresser or your dentist or whoever it is. And I think, you know, when we extend that and we think about, you know, mental health professionals and we think about, okay, we've closed our doors theoretically, you know, we might be just doing telehealth. It's reassuring to that cohort of people that we used to having a door that they could walk in. To know that you still got a door that they can walk in, it's just an online door that they can walk in and they can see that you're still going, you're not closing your practice down. Shrunk it down into something that's manageable during a lockdown period if you're in lockdown. So I think that consistency, it's about the decision behind why you're doing it. And that's where people get stuck. Oh, I don't want to be salesy, I don't want to be promotional, I don't want to be this, I don't want to be that. It's none of those things. It's about being visible so that people, A, they know you're there, they know you exist. B, they're connecting with a message that you're sharing for a reason that is beyond self-serving. You're sharing a message because you want to help others. And C, it's reassuring to them. They know that you're there. They know that you know, you've not gone anywhere. You're still there, you know, that sort of thing. So that consistency is actually really, really important.
Correct. And what it comes down to is all you're doing is communicating. You know, you're not selling, maybe indirectly you are, but if all you need to do is communicate, the fact that you are communicating with them is really selling you as a business already. So you don't have to sell, you just need to talk to them, right? And share with them and educate them and let them in. So it's really about reframing that what I'm doing when I am visible on social media, when I'm sharing these things, is I'm communicating. And coming back always for me as a mental health professional and allied health professional, that is the basis of what we do. We communicate to people in order to affect their treatment. We teach them how to communicate better, you know, all those skills around it. So it's just like using my stuff that I do anyway and just applying it to a business activity. So just embrace it.
Exactly right. So I think, you know, I mean, the key things for me at the moment, I think, is, you know, look at what's happening. If you're not in Victoria, look at what's happening in Melbourne. And think, okay, how would I adapt to going back into lockdown for my business? What would I do? What do I need to start preparing now in the event that we were to go into lockdown? Because the timeframes we're talking about, it's highly likely that somewhere else there'll be an outbreak and somewhere else I'll have to, and it might be big like Melbourne, or it might be small like the northwest coast of Tasmania. When they had their outbreak, they had to lock down a part of the northwest coast of Tasmania. This is back in lockdown, after, you know, during lockdown 1.0. They had to really shut down a part of that area of the state. So it might be in a rural community, it might be in a metropolitan area. We don't know, we can't know. Mm. So because we can't know, expect the unexpected, plan for it. Think, okay, what can I start doing now? What can I start offering now? What can I start doing now that supports my community and makes it an easier transition? So it makes it an easier transition. Can I start reinforcing that telehealth is still an option? When people want to cancel an appointment, can I offer them telehealth as an alternative? And a really good example of that is, you know, someone who's cancelling an appointment because they've got a sick child at home.
Yeah.
Like your session, we can do it via telehealth. You don't need to cancel. We can have a telehealth session instead. Yeah. So perhaps starting to get heads around, no matter what business you're in, what was I doing in lockdown 1.0 that was really innovative? Have I let that slide because I feel like I don't need to do that anymore? Mm. And if I have, should I perhaps reintroduce that gradually so that it's still there as a backup? So thinking about, you know, our people with their at-home little beautiful hampers of food, they never stopped doing that. They announced they were going to stop doing it the week after. They were due to stop doing it the week after lockdown started. So luckily they hadn't stopped.
Wow.
So they just kept it going. Like, we will keep going. You know, so thinking about what you can do now to start preparing your business for a future lockdown. And if you never have another lockdown, bonus, you've got a new service as part of your standard suite of offerings. Mm. You've got a new way of doing business that runs alongside the traditional ways of doing business. Mm.
So much yes to all of that. And you know what? When it happens, there's no use in fighting the reality of it, because it is what it is, right? And it's about accepting that lockdown, if that happens and when it happens, it is what it is. And then coming back to now what? What do I need to do now? And really going into some of those examples of problem solving and, you know, coming up with creative solutions in this situation and using it as an opportunity to think creatively. I know that might sound difficult, but it's amazing what people come up with when they just decide that that is how they're going to approach that.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. All right. I think we've solved the problems of the world today.
Tick, tick, tick. We should be in charge, Tess. You know that.
If we were in charge, things would be so much more efficient, that's for sure. All right, I am going to end our little recording session today. Thank you to those of you who are listening later. Look forward to talking to you all again very, very soon.
Thank you.
Okay, and fare thee well, Facebook, because I know Gerda has to rush. Yes, I will have a look on my any comments that I've that have been. I don't know if we've had any comments, but if we have, we will respond in due course. Have a fabulous
day. Most certainly.
Stay safe, stay sane, stay well.